Back with Connections Now, and I'm really happy to be joined once again by Paul Layton of the Salem News. Paul, how are you doing?
I'm doing great, Rick. Yeah, thank you for having me on.
Oh, man, love talking with you. There's so much to discuss all the time, your coverage in Beverly and Salem in particular. I want to start with a story that caught my eye recently. I've talked with John Frates, of course, Pete Frates' dad, a couple of times, John being on the Beverly City Council and so on, but also, you know, championing the cause of his son and fundraising and so on. So I want to get into that, Paul. Tell me a little bit about why John is leaving the Beverly City Council.
Sure, Rick. Yeah, John is actually he and his wife Nancy are moving, and they're only moving across town. But he's a ward councilor in Beverly, represents Ward 6, and so the rule is that you obviously you have to live in the ward that you represent, and so he needs to step down by the end of this year, the calendar year. He still had another year left on his two-year term, and so a replacement will be chosen by the city council. So it's kind of unusual. I haven't seen it in my years of covering Beverly that that an opening has come up this way. But I spoke with John, and as you mentioned, the Frates name is so well known in Beverly and really across the country and the world after the inspirational story of Pete Frates. And so this story about a city councilor stepping down is kind of woven into that larger story about the Frates families and all the work they've done on behalf of ALS research. But John was saying that Pete was living, Pete and his wife and his young daughter were living in the family house in Beverly. They had put an extension on, and it was made accessible and so forth. And so that's now that, Pete has passed away and his wife and daughter have, moved out. So that sort of is the reason.
Paul,
John and Nancy.
In your experience, talking with John Frates, I've only interviewed him once, I believe, with Beverly Council, other issues, but he seems to have a real positive attitude and a very, I don't know, light sense of humor, looking at the good side of things. I mean, his talk that I've dealt with him and read in the papers, it's always upbeat. Have you found him to be that way also?
No, Rick, that's a great description. In fact, at the city council meeting, when he announced this move, and that's what one of his fellow councilors mentioned, that Estelle Rand, that he has just the kind of personality that makes him easier to deal with. And she said that they could disagree and yet still be friends. And I always remember John spoke at Pete's funeral at Boston College, and it was just a beautiful speech. But what struck me, and I don't really remember the details so much, but that John, even during that time, had a sense of humor and told these stories in such an honest way about Pete and the type of person he was. And but he sort of kept it light, but at the same time, not diminishing
right.
the importance and the sadness of the whole thing. So I think that sort of sums up John. He's really, really a great guy.
So
he's going to be missed on the council.
I have a twofold question. Do you think he'll at some point run again? Has he indicated that? And how does his seat get filled?
Oh, yeah, good question. I don't know. He might run again, but to be honest with you, I kind of doubt it. It's funny because he was actually on the council back in the 1980s. He served 1 year. It was then known as the Board of Aldermen. He just served 1 year, and then he had a family. And then he ended up running almost 30 years later, and he said he was kind of proud that he was able to come back, and he said he joked to his fellow councilors that he's got to wait 30 years and run again.
Okay.
In his 90s, but probably not. In terms of the selection process, I didn't realize this, but if this move had come in the last 6 months of his term, then he could have served it out.
Mm-hmm.
But since it was more than that he needs to step down and the city council picks the replacement, if he had an opponent in the last election and that opponent had gotten, I believe it was at least 30% of the vote, then that person
okay.
had taken his spot if that person wanted it. But since he ran unopposed, it the city council just picks them. So Council President Paul Guanti at the last meeting asked for people who are interested in the seat to contact the city, and then the council is going to vote and pick the successor, which is something I haven't seen before.
Well, all right, well, stay tuned. We'll learn more about that. All right, now tell me a little bit about, you know, I remember when I moved to Massachusetts as a senior in high school, one of my biggest thrills was traveling with a friend to McDonald's on the waterfront there at the base of the Beverly-Salem Bridge. And it was exciting because I got to go in a car, you know, by myself without the parents and so on. I didn't own a car of my own. And we'd go to McDonald's, and I think for 15 cents you get a burger, 10 cents you get a fries, and so on. But something, you know, there's been a lot going on. There's going to be a new restaurant there and so on. But the story you wrote about a mural being deemed historically significant, can you flesh that out for me?
Yeah, it's kind of a funny story in that. So this McDonald's opened in 1963. It was one of the first in the area, and but it closed in 1995 when the new Beverly-Salem Bridge, quote-unquote, new Beverly-Salem Bridge was built, and it made it a little more difficult to get in there. So anyway, the McDonald's closed. The city ended up buying the property. And so the building has been essentially empty for 25 years. And as you mentioned about a restaurant, the city for years has been trying to get a restaurant in there, and they do have an agreement. They have a lease sign, and the building, the old Yale McDonald's building, is about to be knocked down to make way for this new restaurant. But this mural was painted at some point in time, a few years after the McDonald's opened, when they put an extension on the back and added a dining room. And this mural was painted by Emile Goupé and his son from Gloucester, sort of well-known painters, and they painted this scene of the Beverly waterfront right onto the wall of this new dining room. And anyway, that has the city took the wall, took the painting down last year. They had to take the whole wall down. They shipped it out to a restorer in Williamstown, where they're hoping to have it restored and then bring it back and put it in the library and displayed. But in order to get some money to pay for that restoration, they had it declared significant in terms of its history and its meaning to the community. So it's kind of this funny story about this mural that was in this restaurant, and, you know, with ketchup stains on it and so forth. you know, the city is going to great lengths to, you know, to save it and to bring it back to have people look at it. As you know, just from your story, from what I've, a lot of people in Beverly that, you know, remember that far back, and they have this sort of strange attachment to this place, or good memories.
Yeah, I do.
McDonald's, you know? So it kind of meant a lot to the people in a certain way. So this is kind of one way to keep, you know, the memory of that place alive.
Well, I moved here in the summer of 65, and so, yeah, I go way back. But I want to point out that in the Salem News, I think it's Monday's edition, photographer Ryan McBride has a picture of it, of the mural, and it's quite fascinating. And it looks like you're actually looking out a great big window. So it's pretty cool.
Yeah, it is neat. And I remember when I did a story on it last year when they were removing it, I talked to Emil Goupé's son, Robert, who's in, like, his 70s, now, and he sort of laughed when I told him the story that the city was going to these great efforts to save it and restore it, because he said they just kind of did it quickly in a couple of days. He didn't think it was a masterpiece or anything, and he told the story about the guy that was working in there. You know, they were laying tile for the new dining room, and he said one of the workers was really tall, and they had him paint the sky on the mural.
There you go.
So I love that.
Oh, that's cool.
Story that he was, so anyway.
That's cool. Hey, listen, I wonder if Da Vinci knew that the Mona Lisa was going to be a masterpiece. You know, you just don't know these things. All right.
There you go.
Paul, final topic I want to mention here. The election, the national election last Tuesday, is still creating a lot of news buzz, of course, nationally. And one of the things that one of the main events is how the polls, how the vote was taken at local polling places and so on, and how they were counted at state venues. From what I can ascertain, reading the Salem News, the Gloucester Times, the Lawrence Eagle Tribune, the item over, and there was a tremendous turnout. But I don't know of any major issues in the area. What was your experience with this?
No, I think that's right, Rick. I think it was all about the presidential race, so just about all of it. You know, there weren't any huge local elections. You know, Seth Moulton won re-election in a fairly easy race. There was a good state representative race in Danvers where four people were competing to fill the spot that's been held by Ted Spiliotis for a long time, who's stepping down. You know, in Beverly, there was a state rep race, and the incumbent, Jerry Parasola, won easily. So there was, there weren't a whole lot of big races, you know, local races in our area, but the turnout was still high. We did a story the day after the election and checked with our local city and town clerks, and we have, just looking at the story now, 8 of the 11 cities and towns in our area, the Salem New Circulation area, the turnout was more than 80%.
Wow. Which
is really great. It sort of mirrors what happened nationally. The top one that we found was in Wenham. They had an 89% turnout, which is a lot. But kind of the funny thing, and, you know, what was different about this year, obviously, was all of the early in-person voting and the mail-in voting. So even though, say, in Wenham, it was a huge turnout, maybe the best they've ever had, it wasn't necessarily all that busy on election day because the clerk said about 70% of those voters had already cast their ballot before election day.
Mm-hmm.
You know?
Wow.
They had these huge turnouts, but not necessarily a big rush on election day because of the early mail-in voting.
Well, I think it's the participation. Generally, you know, you see these off election years, local elections, and you'll see 25%, 30% of the registered voters. So that's pretty amazing. 89% in Wenham. Whoa.
Yeah, that's incredible. I mean, it would be great to see higher turnouts for local elections, you know, and I know that's difficult, but you're right. It's really gives you a good feeling when, you know, when people are taking part in the process.
Well, I guess a final question, and we didn't talk about this in our pregame warm-up, but the effects of COVID, I've noticed people, for want of a better term, I like what they talk about, COVID fatigue. But locally, at least on Cape Ann, people are still adhering to it. I'm noticing more and more masks when I'm out. Obviously, whenever you're in a store, everybody's masking up. Salem has a mask issue that you have to obey now. Just anecdotally, Paul, what are you feeling about how things are going right now, especially with the hope of a vaccine coming down the pipe here in a few months?
Right. No, I think you're right. I think people are wearing masks a lot more, it does seem like. And the thing that's been interesting to me is with the return of kids to schools in a lot of places and in colleges and so forth, and people are saying, and I'm assuming it's true, that those aren't really the problems. I sort of initially thought, geez, you put a bunch of kids and teachers back into school and you might have big problems. But they say, you know, even though there have been cases, they say there's not a lot of evidence of transmission within the school, so that it gets worse and worse. Where it's happening is just in people in their private, you know, gatherings. You know?
Yeah.
I think that's where you mentioned the fatigue, and people say, well, I can have friends over, and then you have a few more friends over, and then you might get a little lax on wearing the mask and getting colder, and you might go inside. So to me, that's what I found interesting, that it's not the return to school or work so much, because people do seem to follow the rules in those cases. It's in people's private times and personal gatherings where it looks like people need to be, you know, more vigilant about that stuff, especially with the holidays coming up.
Yeah, and that's a good point about the schools, Paul, because I know that they've closed, they've gone back to remote learning in a couple of situations over an abundance of caution. One person might have been in contact with someone else, and then they immediately go to the remote. And also, the same thing with the interscholastic sports. I mean, they haven't shut down sports, which is great, but they'll take a day, two off, or a week off, or whatever it might take, and it seems to be working.
Yeah, and I do think that's encouraging. I know, you know, my daughter's in college, and she's, and I was worried about that at first, but the rates are lower at some of these schools, you know, than they are in the outside world, you know, because they're really strict about things, you know. So so hopefully people can just be, you know, more vigilant in their personal lives, you know. That's not something they have to hear from me.
I know.
You know, as we get, as I said, as we start going indoors more and going through the holidays, I think that's the big concern.
And if that's not enough, you got traffic neon signs everywhere saying "put your mask on." It's it's everywhere, every store.
It's just a way of life.
Oh yeah,
And, I mean, I'm thinking once you know, once this whole thing is over, I think people will still be wearing masks in certain situations. I started thinking, if I'm going to a basketball game with a, you know, crowded basketball game, you know, a year or two from now with a lot of people, I might still wear a mask, you know. I think it might become a habit in some ways, you know.
I've thought about that too, and I think that's probably going to happen, yeah. And I know one thing, I carry hand sanitizer with me all the time, and I use it all the time, and I never did that. And I can see myself doing this now for the rest of my life.
Yeah, no, I think so. It's just to prevent against the flu, you know.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, once COVID is gone, you know, hopefully. Then, so, yeah, I think a lot of, you know, I think a lot of things are going to be different once it's over, you know.
Well, Paul, it's not too early to wish you a happy Thanksgiving. We're going to talk again in a few more weeks, and in the meantime, please be safe.
Same to you, Rick. Yeah, I'm going to miss the Thanksgiving football.
Oh, God, yep.
You guys are talking about that with the sports guys.
Oh, yeah.
That's going to be a really big void, such a tradition on the North Shore and in Massachusetts. But yes, thanks for having me on, Rick. I really appreciate it.
Oh, no, thank you for the time and telling those great stories. I really appreciate that, too. Thank you, Paul. Stay safe.
Okay, you too, Rick.
Talk to you later. Yep.
Bye.
Bye-bye. That is Paul Layton, he was the sports editor and at the Salem News, Beverly Times reporter, but now the Salem News reporter covering primarily Beverly and Salem. With MSO News Sports, I'm Rick Moore.